The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
The Michael Jackson film has become the highest grossing biopic of all time. And here to tell us why is Chris Wasser, Sunday Independent film critic. Good morning, Chris.
Claire, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I don't know if you can answer that question, because I know that you don't think this movie is great, right? And a lot of people have questioned how good it is. It had the controversial bits cut out, as we know, because we've had that conversation on the programme before. Why is it doing so well?
Yeah, it's a strange one. I really can't explain it. But we might be able to look at the music figures, the charts, to at least try to explain this phenomenal film. Well, in terms of its box office success, it's a phenomenon. But it's no surprise that people flock to see a Michael Jackson film when you look at the charts at the minute. I mean, if you look at the Irish album charts, you have a situation where Billie Jean is number nine. Even the single charts, like Billie Jean is number nine. You've got three Michael Jackson albums in the Irish charts at the minute in terms of the top 20. You've got three in the UK top 20. You've got two Michael Jackson albums in the Billboard 200 in America. People are still listening to his music. I mean, some 17 years after his death, he is still in the top five most listened to artists on Spotify with 109 million listeners per month. So to put that into perspective in terms of what other people are listening to, that's 10 million more listeners per month than Bad Bunny, 7 million more than Taylor Swift, 25 million more than Ed Sheeran. The long and short of it is that people are still listening to Michael Jackson. And the producer of this Michael Jackson biopic, Graham King, and obviously the folks at the Michael Jackson estate, they would have known this going into it. They would have looked at the figures and the record sales and said, people are still listening to our artists here. So let's make a film. They will, given the success of Bohemian Rhapsody, which Graham King was involved in, people will come out and watch this thing. And it just goes to show as well that, you know, at a time where you have other, you know, IPs, let's say like, you know, Star Wars with The Mandalorian and Grogu, comic book films like Supergirl, films like that are failing at the box office at the minute. But a Michael Jackson story has just thrived. And they've obviously noticed that, you know, people go see musical biographical films, and some films are critic proof, and the Michael Jackson biopic has proven that.
And you have seen this, and they make a big play of the music, right? So they've looked at the figures, as you say, and they have seen where their audience interest lies, and they have definitely capitalized on that in how they've put this thing together.
Yeah, they have. I mean, at the beginning, so you had screenwriter John Logan and director Antoine Fuqua. Director Antoine Fuqua, who's made some decent films. At the beginning, they wanted to make this, you know, complete biopic that would have been about 3 hours long, maybe 3.5 hours long, and it would have explored Michael Jackson's entire life, you know, from his childhood in Gary, Indiana, right up until his death in 2009. But as we've discussed before countless times, you know, they did run into trouble, especially throughout production when they'd already filmed some scenes and were told by lawyers, no, we can't address some allegations, we can't address the Jordan Chandler accusations from 1993, because there were clauses in settlements that said that those cases could not be mentioned in any sort of dramatization or any sort of documentary or film or whatever. So you had a case where Antoine Fuqua had filmed all of these scenes, and they had to push them aside and make a decision. How do we tell Michael Jackson's story on screen if we can't talk about A, B, and C? Well, we can address the E and F. We can make a musical film, which is sort of what they have done. It felt to me as if, you know, the producers had looked at the last 20 minutes of Bohemian Rhapsody that everyone always celebrates, you know, that famous Live Aid scene, which, to be fair, and I did not like that film at all, but it is technically, you know, a very well, it's a nice reconstruction of a real concert. They've looked at that and said, let's make a film like that. Let's make a complete 2.5 hour film that's just like that.
So it's like a concert film then, is it?
But that's all it is. If you're just going to make a reconstructed concert film, why didn't you just release an actual concert film? You know, that doesn't actually make for a biopic. So if you excuse, you know, all of the allegations, all of the accusations, it's still a very poorly made film, I thought. There's no proper performances in there. It's all impersonations. I mean, Jafar Jackson, he does do a lovely impersonation, which it's a peculiar way of describing it, I know, but it is a good impersonation of his famous uncle. But that's all it is. There's no dramatic worth there. It's a party trick. It's the same for what Coleman Domingo is doing as Joe Jackson, Michael Jackson's father. There's no real, as I say, there's no real dramatic worth there. There's no real structure. The storytelling's all over the place. You come away from a film which covers so many decades in the life of Michael Jackson, except for, you know, everything from the 90s onwards, with more questions than you had going in. And you shouldn't get that with a biopic. That was my problem with it.
Mm-hmm. It's making $1 million a day. That's on top of the massive weekend that it had when it opened back in April. And it has surpassed Oppenheimer, which was the previous record holder. That earned $965 million 3 years ago. And this has gone past that, heading hurtling towards $1 billion. It's extraordinary.
Yeah, it is extraordinary. Yeah. And it's extraordinary that we're outside of the 45 to 60 day theatrical window where, you know, depending on the film success, studios will decide to keep this film in cinemas, even if there's been a deal to, you know, put it on digital services. But we've gone past that. It is on digital services. You can rent and buy it for around €18 or whatever it is, but it's still in cinemas. And people are still going to see it in cinemas. And I think it will remain in cinemas, even though you can watch it at home for potentially another month, which will help it. I mean, it's at 977 million at the minute. That will help it, its cinema window, go past $1 billion, which is extraordinary. I mean, it had the highest opening day of any film in 2026. It had the highest opening for a musical biographical film. It surpassed Oppenheimer's, you know, opening weekend records within, you know, its first 3 days. It's still climbing. And I mean, at the time of reviewing this film back in April, I argued that there's no way that it's going to, you know, get past Bohemian Rhapsody in terms of its commercial success. And it has. Another thing I said was,
did you write that down,
no way.
Chris? You wrote that down, did you?
Did.
Oh, no.
I did, unfortunately.
Sorry.
And I'm embarrassed. But I also argued that there's no way that it's going to stick around long enough for award season. And now I'm genuinely frightened that it will. I am.
It's not going to win anything. It can't. Is it not going to win anything?
I don't think it can win anything, but I think it's impossible, unfortunately, to ignore the commercial success of it.
Yeah, I get that. And, you know, I haven't seen it because I want to see a film about Michael Jackson, but it has to be Michael Jackson, the totality of his story. You know, I've watched Neverland. I know all of the stories about him. And so I don't see the point of watching something that is a whitewash, essentially.
Yeah, and you learn nothing from it. You learn nothing about the man behind the so-called legends. I mean, this is a film that would rather depict Michael Jackson sitting around at night talking to a llama and talking to a snake than to actually delve deep into actually what made him tick and what made him, you know, what if the film is repeatedly saying this guy is a musical genius. Well, why? Like, show, like, educate us on the actual person. And Graham King and the producers, you know, who were involved in this, they were so intent on making a film that celebrated the music, that celebrated, you know, that so-called legend. I think they will have an extraordinarily difficult time then making a film that looks at real life, which is sort of what they said they want to do with the second film. But I don't see how you do that, because Lionsgate have confirmed that a sequel is in development. The director Antoine Fuqua has said that he shot so much footage that he could have at least 30 or 40% of the second film finished.
But a lot of that footage he can't use, or at least that's what they've told us.
Exactly. So what I'm guessing is that a lot of people are behind the scenes are currently scrambling to figure out what they can do or how they can tell the story. I mean, if you've seen the film, the last thing we see in the film, the story actually finishes in 1984. It jumps ahead to the London leg of the Bad tour in 1988, so we can get one more song in. And then up on the screen, there's a title card that says His Story Continues, which is either a sequel promise or just letting the audience know that if we can't actually legally get around to a sequel, just know that there was more. Well, there was a lot more. But I don't know how they address those things if they're not allowed to. And I don't think audiences will rush to a second Michael Jackson film. I mean, I need to be careful. I was wrong before, but I just don't think audiences, I don't think they'd be interested in a second film that just does more of the same. There needs to be some real life in there.
Jared has been in touch with us. I thought the Michael Jackson movie had no story to it, and it wasn't very good as a traditional movie, but it was a vehicle just to play his songs for 2 hours, as you say, Chris, and they were absolute bangers, and Jared loved it. So you see, that's the secret to it, isn't it? And we've been having this conversation for so many years about Michael Jackson. Can you still appreciate his music while acknowledging and being abhorred by his private life and what happened and what should have happened in terms of criminal convictions that didn't happen? Can you separate the two? And some people can, clearly.
Yeah, I think it's become extraordinarily difficult for me to do that because I grew up on this man's music, and the man's music is just, it's golden. And it's just, it's some, you know, he was responsible for some of the greatest songs of all time, some of the greatest pop songs of all time. But I find it very hard to listen to his music now. And I think when people talk about separating the artist from the art, which is possible, you know, in some cases, I just find that very difficult to do. And I find it very difficult for people who I admire, for filmmakers I admire, for actors, you know, like whether it's Coleman Domingo or Miles Teller, as I said, Anton Foucault has made some phenomenal films before. But for them to service up a film like this and say, here, enjoy this, and just kind of try to brush away everything else that you've read, I think that's an insult. I think it's an insult to, you know, film audiences. I think it's an insult to, you know, fans of pop music. You can't brush those things aside. I mean, at the minute, while the most popular film in the world at the minute is a biographical film about Michael Jackson that doesn't address any of the historical allegations or accusations. And then at the same time, you've got a documentary over on Netflix, which addresses everything except for the music, yes, about Michael Jackson. That's so popular at the minute too. That does not make sense to me. I find it very difficult to listen to his music at the moment.
Chris, good to talk to you. It's just a phenomenal success.
The Claire Byrne Show with Aviva Insurance. Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.